This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Counties in states across the nation report a significant rise in voter registration this election season. Numbers are especially high in swing states like Ohio, Missouri, Pennsylvania, and Florida. To handle the unexpected overflow, election workers are putting in long hours and hiring extra help to get everyone on the rolls by November 2nd. The increase in registration is due in part to huge get-out-the-vote efforts sponsored by partisan 527 groups, by the political parties themselves, and by celebrities like P. Diddy. There's no way to know how many of these newly registered voters will actually show up on Election Day, but the best guess is that turnout will be unusually large this year. Amid the flood of registrations, though, come claims of fraud and allegations of systematic attempts to keep some people from voting. It may come as no surprise that many of these charges are already in court in Florida. For most of this hour, we're going to focus on the spike in voter registration, what it means for this election and beyond. Take a closer look at Florida. We'll speak with a skeptic who argues that high voter turnout isn't necessarily good for democracy. And we'll have your letters. If you've registered to vote for the first time this year, give us a call and tell us why. If you've decided not to vote, we'd like to hear from you as well. And call and tell us if there are questions about the way election officials are handling registrations where you live. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. The deadline to register to vote in Oregon is tomorrow. New applications have swamped election offices there, including in Washington County, an area that experts say could swing either way come November. Jerry Hansen is director of the Washington County Department of Assessment and Taxation. They preside over elections. He's with us by phone from his office. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good afternoon.
So I gather it's been busy of late.
We've been extraordinarily busy. It's incomparable, really, the number of new registrations we're processing this year.
Give us some way to judge between this and past years.
Well, so far since May, we've received about 30,000. We're expecting another possibly 10,000 by the end of the registration process, which is an increase of 10%. It's probably twice as many as we've had in any previous election, presidential election, in terms of increasing.
Mm-hmm. Now, processing these registration forms obviously takes some time. Have you been able to keep up?
No. We're working on weekends and overtime every day, but I think we're working on last Thursday's today, and we are expecting about 2,000 to 3,000 per week. And it does take time, and so we're adding people as well.
Are there any particular questions arising?
We have really a whole variety of things to check out. One of them is citizenship. That's new under Help America Voter Act.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make sure that's checked. Residences have to be accurate. Names have to be accurate. We have to know where the voter was from if they are an Oregon voter. So there's a variety of things to do with those cards.
Any controversies?
No, I think right now the problem is just making sure we try to get these registrations processed so that they'll get a ballot on time. We're mailing ballots out on the 15th of October. We're a vote by mail here in Oregon. So that's our significant challenge right now.
So just the fact that the deadline for registration comes up tomorrow, you've got another big deadline staring at you right in the face.
That's right. We'll, of course, be sending out about 250,000 ballots on the 15th, but we'll end up probably having 265,000 by the time, you know, the election day comes, and so we'll be mailing out additional numbers following our normal mail-out date. And it's going to be really difficult. Our people are stressed to the max just keeping up with this, and then we'll have to conduct the election, which is going to be a barn burner.
Yeah. Now, what do you attribute all of this activity, this increased registration, to?
It's across the board. I think, to be honest with you, I'd attribute it to the 2000 election, where people realized how important every vote is. And we have groups across the spectrum getting involved on Get Out the Vote and registering people. I could give you some examples.
Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah. Sure. Of course, the major parties have their groups and their surrogate groups, and in Washington County, Hispanic voters are an important component. We have various ballot measures on the ballot that stir up interest. For example, ballot measure 36, which defines marriage as between one man and one woman and puts that in the Constitution. We had a surge of requests for registration card from churches. We have young voter projects. We have student voter coalitions. We have projects to let felons or people residing in jails know that they have a right to vote. Labor unions, women's groups. It's really across the board.
When you get a form, can you tell if it's been processed by one group or another?
Well, for example, we had a lady come into our office the other day with we thought she was getting ready to go on a trip because she had a big suitcase on wheels, and turns out she was delivering a load of ballots to us, and obviously those came from the same place. But, sometimes we do see, and this is not the norm, but once in a while we do see cards that appear to be filled out by the same person, and we take a close look at those. And in Oregon, when we send, we do vote by mail, so if somebody has a bogus address, we pick up on that right away, and that tends to be, although I haven't personally seen very many of these, but that tends to be one of the things we discover.
So you're scheduling your first full night's sleep for November 3rd?
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't been working as hard as the staff down at the elections office, and that may be one reason I'm on this interview today. I feel guilty.
Jerry Hansen, good luck.
Okay.
Jerry Hansen is director of the Washington County Department of Assessment and Taxation. They preside over elections. That's in the state of Oregon. The registration numbers we're seeing are an exception to recent voting trends. And here to tell us what to make of this year's spike is Thomas Patterson, professor of government and the press at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, author of the book The Vanishing Voter. He's with us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
So far, most of what we know about these registration numbers is anecdotal. So do we really know what's going on nationwide?
Oh, I think we do. I mean, certainly these are unofficial and incomplete numbers. But, virtually every state and community that's reported the trend has talked about an upsurge in the registration. In Cleveland, they've had twice the number of new registrants this year compared with 2000. Washington State has reached a record number of registrants. According to the battleground states, Florida and Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, registration is up. The New York Times 2 weeks ago did a county-by-county survey that showed the same thing. It's not even across the board. I mean, as you suggested it at the opening of the program, it's higher in battleground states than it is in other states. It's also higher in urban areas than it is in rural areas. But I think we're seeing a real surge in voter registration, and I think it will be followed by a strong increase in turnout in November.
Well, that's the obvious question. Do newly registered voters turn out to vote in the same percentages as regular voters do?
Well, not always. After the 92 election, and we had if you look at the period from 1960 to 2000, the one election where there was a strong increase in turnout in that whole period was 1992. Right after the 92 election, Congress passes the Motor Voter Act, which made it easier for people to register. And there were more people on the registration rolls in 96 than there were in 1992. And yet turnout actually fell through the floor in 1996. It dropped below 50%, the lowest since the 1920s. So that there's not necessarily a relationship between an increase in registration and an increase in turnout. But I think it's different this year.
How come?
What Motor Voter did was it made it easy to register. You were getting a motor vehicle license, and all you had to do was sort of sign the form and say, yes, I'd like to register. And essentially, it wasn't motivated registration. People weren't registering because they really wanted to vote. But I think as a result of what happened in 2000, but also the election issues this time are big issues, and the American public recognizes that. And this is motivated registration, not only on the part of all of these groups that are out there, but we've had a lot of individuals seek out registration offices and with the intention very much of casting a ballot this November.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Thomas Patterson, a professor of government and the press at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, about the spike in registration this year. And let's get some callers on the line. Kevin is with us from Farmington, Michigan.
Hey, how's it going?
All right.
I love your show. I've been listening for the last couple of months, and I absolutely love it.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm 25 years old. I just registered a few months ago to be my first time voting. And, you know, there's a couple of reasons for that. I guess I was one of those people that always that thought that my vote didn't count. And, you know, the 2000 election definitely proved me wrong. But, you know, also the president administration, the execution of policy, how they've executed it, and the issues at hand have been a great motivator for me to get out and vote, you know. To get out and vote, because, you know, I definitely got a problem with the way that things are being handled today, you know. So I think that's why you're going to get a lot. I think that's why the voter participation is so high, you know, today.
Well, Kevin's call, Thomas Patterson, suggests that Jerry Hansen in Oregon, his experience is nationwide, that maybe people remember after 2000, their vote does count.
Oh, absolutely. I think the 2000 election left a real imprint on the American public. We were doing national surveys every week of the 2000 campaign, and by far the peak in the level of public interest in the election was after the election. And people learned a lot of lessons, I think, from 2000. But people like Kevin really are the key to the future. You know, we've had this long decline in voter participation in this country beginning in 1960, and leading the decline have been young voters. Their turnout rate in 1972 was about 50%, and it was barely above 30% in 2000. And if we're going to turn this thing around, it's going to be turned around with young people. And I think a combination of 2000, 9/11, the Iraq War, there's something about the political atmosphere today that's very different than it was in 2000. And young people are part of it. And again, it's anecdotal, but there seems to be pretty good indicators out there that we'll have a really healthy increase in turnout among first-time voters, mm-hmm. first-time eligibles.
Kevin, thanks very much for the call.
No problem. Thanks.
Bye-bye. This email question goes along with that comment. Michelle M. in Salt Lake City writes to ask, I'm wondering if anyone has calculated how many of the newly registered voters are in each grade age group. Are 18 to 30-year-olds registering more than they have before? Again, we don't have the figures on registration, so what's your guess?
Well, you know, that's where the biggest gain was possible, because so many young adults were not registered and were not voting. Also, you know, that age group between roughly 18 and 22 or so that are located on college campuses, they happen to be quite easy to get to. And a lot of these efforts that we've been talking about have been directed at college students. And again, by all of the kind of anecdotal evidence and the hearsay that we've been getting, there's a lot of interest on the campuses, a rush to register on the campuses, so that, you know, something I think is really happening with this age group. And I think it's the war, to be honest with you. It's not as if 2000 didn't leave an imprint on young adults, but we didn't see any surge of young voters in the midterm 2002 election. It's really sort of only in the last year and a half, when things started to turn sour in Iraq, and Americans on both sides of the Iraq issue got stirred up, that we've really seen turmoil and interest of a kind we haven't seen in a long time on college campuses and other places involved young people.
We're talking about the spike in voter registration. 800-989-8255, totn@npr.org. Back after a break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the increase in potential voters this election, a spike in registration reported, especially in swing states this year, and what it means. Our guest is Thomas Patterson, professor of government and the press at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He's the author of the book, The Vanishing Voter. He's with us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Of course, you're invited to join us. Are you a newly registered voter? Tell us what brought you into the fold. If you've been directly targeted by a get-out-the-vote effort, call and tell us what happened. The number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get another caller on the line. Ben joins us now from Plymouth, Indiana.
Hi, I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me on your show.
Sure.
I'm 27, and this is the first year I voted or registered to vote. And a couple of main reasons why I did this, I'm a single father. And I think it's so close, and then Bush being in there with that tax break the way it is. And another point is, with the war over there, I think if he gets in a second time, that more will be accomplished. Maybe right now with the election, his hands feel kind of tied. I want to make no big moves over there.
Why did you not vote before? What's the biggest reason for deciding to register to vote this time?
That how before it was so close, and this year, I mean, with they're saying it's so close in the polls, and I'll be honest, I'm for Bush right now, and I can't afford my taxes to be going up, and I wouldn't like Kerry leading the troops over there.
Mm-hmm. And you're definitely planning to vote, Ben?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely planning to vote.
Okay, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. One of the things that this this surge in voting registration makes difficult, doesn't it, is polling, opinion polls. We hear polls of registered voters and then polls of likely voters. Aren't these newly registered voters sort of automatically disqualified from the likely voter category?
Well, they're certainly messing up the pollsters. You know, when pollsters do the trial heat polls during the campaign. They don't take the entire sample of people that they've talked with because, you know, that actually turns out to have a different set of preferences than those are actually going to show up to the polls on election day. So they have this set of filters that they use. And one of the best filters to determine whether someone you're talking to in a poll is going to vote or not as to whether they voted the last time. And in 2000, first-time voters accounted for about 9% of the electorate. So, but this time, I think we're going to be talking 12, 13, 14% perhaps of the electorate. And pollsters really don't have sort of good ways to figure out among people who have never voted before which ones are going to vote and which ones are not. So that it probably throws these polls off maybe a point, at most 2 points, but it certainly does confound their business.
Mm-hmm. And it makes predictions of any sort more difficult.
Well, I think it makes it more hazardous, and there's certainly a lot of other things surrounding polling today that make it more difficult. You know, the number of people who are willing to talk with someone calling them on the phone has decreased sharply. So that, but I think what we can say is, you know, sort of look at the polls and see which ones are fairly consistent, and those are probably the ones that are pretty close to where mm-hmm. Americans are at this point in time. And if you find one that's, you know, off by 5, 6, 7 points from where everyone else is, that's probably the poll you want to discount.
Okay, and the pollsters also generally just poll people who have regular telephones that. Small but growing group who just uses cell phones, they're excluded as well.
It is getting tougher, Neil. And of course, one way that they protect themselves is, you know, the proof is in the pudding on in early November on Election Day. And you know, right now, who knows, you know, how the candidates stand with the American public and what the pollsters do in their final poll before Election Day. They increase dramatically the number of people that they talk with, and of course that reduces the polling error, and their record actually has been pretty good over the last 30 or 40 years of polling.
The increase in registration has not come without controversy. Florida is just one of the states hearing claims of registration fraud. There are also lawsuits charging that the state is unfairly discounting scores of potential voters. Here to give us a better picture of what's going on in Florida is Adam Smith, political editor for the St. Petersburg Times. He joins us by phone from his office in St. Pete. Thanks very much for being with us.
Sure.
So who's alleging what?
Well, we've got allegations coming on both sides. Right now, from the Democratic side, we've got about a half dozen lawsuits against the Secretary of State. The woman who's replaced Catherine Harris is Glenda Hood, an appointee of Jeb Bush. And the lawsuits cover everything from provisional ballots, which are those ballots that you, if say you're not on, if you show up to vote and you, they don't find you on the rolls, then you can vote by a provisional ballot. And there's some questions about, let's say you're voting and you're a legitimate voter, but you're in the wrong precinct. Should your vote count? Right now, the interpretation is that no, you better be in the right precinct or your provisional ballot won't count. There are lawsuits over in some counties about the number and locations of early voting sites. Our voting really starts October 18th. And we've got lawsuits concerning how completely filled out these voter registration cards need to be. In some cases, there are items missing where some local election supervisors are saying these are minor items and we'll accept that as a valid registration. The Secretary of State is saying that no, every I and every T needs to be crossed. Otherwise, you shouldn't be allowed to vote.
Mm-hmm. And give us a better sense of how widespread these problems are.
Well, we don't know. We're still struggling. We have, you were talking about these voter registration groups. We've had armies of these independent groups registering tens of thousands of new voters and some of these unlikely voters. And boxes of registration forms flooded into the local elections offices at the last minute. So they're still processing. There's still thousands and thousands of registration cards that are still being processed. But certainly there are thousands of votes potentially ensnared right now.
Mm-hmm. And all those new provisions that were put in after, the last mess in 2000, including those provisional ballots, this could cause a real nightmare on Election Day.
Well, I tell you one nightmare scenario is this. You have on both sides thousands, literally, lawyers coming to Florida and thousands of poll watchers who are supposed to be, were designated by the campaigns to be at the polls and make sure everything is working okay. One scenario is you have some of these poll watchers legally challenging votes as people go in to vote. If they think this person is a felon, not allowed to vote, they can challenge that voter's right to vote. That they think this person might be, say, voting both in New York and Broward County, they may challenge that. It's just a potential for big long lines and delays and more Florida messes.
And through all of this, do you get the feeling that some of these lawyers are just laying the groundwork for what the suits are going to file after Election Day?
It's a little bit of both, because in some cases there's not that much relief that you can get after Election Day. So, you know, if you're suggesting that that there are illegal voters on the rolls or people that were not – that are valid voters who are not allowed to vote, there's not that much you can do on November 3rd when the votes are in. So in some cases, these lawsuits have to be resolved beforehand to go on the offensive ahead of time.
Hmm. Now, Florida is just one state that's facing these issues. Ohio, another swing state, is dealing with a rash of registration problems. Is this anything more than coincidence?
No, I think maybe the lesson of Florida was that when it's that close and the interpretations of elections officials can make that much of a difference, you've got all over the place people are realizing how significant these top elections officials are and their interpretations are, you know, especially in close races.
Adam Smith, thanks very much, and good luck.
Thanks.
Adam Smith, political editor for the St. Petersburg Times. He joined us by phone from his office in St. Petersburg, Florida. And still with us is Thomas Patterson, and let's get some more callers on the line, and we'll begin with Eugene, who's with us from Wiesbaden in Germany.
Hi.
I
just wanted to comment that there's a major drive going on to get soldiers registered to vote, and I didn't know if you were aware of that or not, and just wanted to comment on that to you.
And who's this being done by the military or by other groups?
Yes, it is. It's a major military campaign that's going on to get the soldiers to register and vote from overseas. As you know, in the 2000 election, there were quite a few irregularities. You know, in Florida particularly, they tried to keep the overseas votes from being counted, and so the military is taking great steps to see that sort of thing doesn't happen again.
And there were tremendous procedural problems with some of those overseas ballots.
There always have been. I've been overseas for many years. I voted in many elections, and seldom do my votes get in time to be counted.
What state do you vote in?
Texas.
In Texas? And so
yes.
How soon do you have to mail in your ballot for the 2004 election?
Well, I don't have my ballot yet. I'm expecting it any day, and of course, when I get it, I will mail it out the same day. Mm-hmm. In the past, sometimes I've gotten my ballot after the election has happened.
Nice souvenir sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know, they count them after the fact so much amount of time. I'm not quite sure how much, but, you know, it does get counted, but, I mean, you know, way too late to be counted for, you know, purposes of getting somebody elected.
Mm-hmm. Eugene, thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Thomas Patterson, it's not just the soldiers who are going to be voting by absentee ballot this year. There's been a huge surge in absentee ballots.
Well, the states have relaxed the rules for absentee balloting, and it was once the case you had to show cause, and in most states now you don't have to do that anymore. And more than 10% of the ballots in 2000 were cast absentee. I think it will continue to go up, and there's been a lot of concern expressed, at least, about the possibilities of fraud with absentee balloting. You know, it's done by mail. You don't show up. But the Oregon case where we started today, you know, they've done mail balloting, and they only do mail balloting now, mm-hmm. and they've had 15 years of experience with it. And during that period of time, I think they prosecuted only one case on fraud, so that, you know, I think some of the concerns with fraud are misplaced. We're talking probably more about the problems of inexperienced people going around trying to get other people registered, the problems of people trying to interpret some of these forms. They forget to check a box. I mean, some of the controversy in Florida is there's a box there about, you know, check this if you're a citizen. But then there's another place on the form where you can only sign the form if you're a citizen, so that, you know, some people may assume that they've already taken care of that. So, you know, I think there are lots of barriers here that end up keeping some people away from the vote when the general election comes along. Fraud rarely is, when you get right down to it, the reason.
Mm-hmm. And we don't have people running around these days and registering graveyards anymore?
Well, of course, there's some of that, and you know, we need to be on guard against that. And of course, there's that celebrated case of someone who registered their cat here a few years ago. I mean, I you know, but we have people on election day who vote for Mickey Mouse too. So that, you know, if you've got 100 million voters, you're going to have some jokers out there. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think the moment we get concerned about cats being registered is the time when cats actually show up at the ballot booth. And you know, it's something you have to keep an eye on. And but we lose a lot of votes for reasons that have nothing to do with ill intent. You know, in 2000, 1-2% of the people who went to the polls found their name was not on the rolls, either because they'd been wrongly taken off the rolls or because they'd registered and it hadn't made it onto the rolls. That's one of the reasons there's been this push for provisional voting. And then because of problems of ballots and the like, roughly another 2% of the people who cast ballots in 2000 didn't have their ballot counted. So we're talking, you know, 3-4 million people altogether in these categories. And I've never seen any figures on fraud. It's almost impossible to obtain those, but I'm sure that there probably were fewer than 25,000 truly fraudulent ballots cast in 2000 or would be cast this year. So that, I think the bigger picture is we've got to figure out how to get these election mechanisms working in a way that people who want to participate can and can do so easily, and then when they cast their ballot that it's actually counted.
We're talking with Thomas Patterson about the spike in registration to vote this year. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line. Alice joins us from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Deadlines for registering to vote. It seems like it's kind of undemocratic. It sort of prevents a lot of people from registering. I'm not sure if there is one in my state. I registered early, but I'm wondering if your participants have anything to say about that.
Well, some states do allow registration on Election Day, right?
I know that...
There's a question to the guest. Go ahead, Thomas.
They do, Neil, and in fact, Ellis lives in one of those states. There are six states, including Minnesota, that have same-day or election-day registration, where on election day, if you're not registered, you can go to your local polling place, show your identification, get registered, and vote all in one motion. Registration has historically been a means not only of protecting against fraud, but also, frankly, keeping people from voting. That was clearly the case in the South before the Voting Rights Act of 1965. A lot of states, even after that, for a brief period, required people to be in residence for a year. And some states required them to register a year before the election. That's a good way to hold down the size of the voting public. And the Supreme Court said, no, 30 days. That's the maximum. Here we are. We're a couple of weeks out from the election. And in most states right now, if you're not registered, you're out of luck. There's a smaller number of states, Minnesota included, where you still have time to register and to vote. But, we ought to be thinking about registration. I think Alice is quite right. We ought to be thinking about this as a means of getting people to participate as opposed to a way of making it difficult, harder for them to get involved.
Alice, thanks very much. Let's talk now with Peggy. Peggy's calling from Worthington, Ohio.
Hi. You had asked earlier about things that were happening in some of the swing states.
Mm-hmm.
And I know here our Secretary of State is Ken Blackwell. He's a Republican, and there are several lawsuits going on, one of which I think has already been settled. But earlier he attempted to keep people from being able to vote if their registration wasn't on the correct weight of paper. That one he backed down from. But he is still attempting to keep people from being able to vote. It sounded similar to what was going on in Florida. If they go to the wrong precinct, I think sometimes a lot of times new voters aren't sure where to go, and they go to the wrong place.
And precincts do move from time to time.
Right, yeah. And so if they do that, the attempt is that they will be denied a provisional ballot. So I think those are pretty obvious attempts by a Republican Secretary of State to dampen down the voting. My daughter once was denied voting here in Worthington because we had similar names, so we just have a middle initial different.
I see.
And we called to check to make sure ahead of time that she was registered and got an affirmative from our phone call. But when we both went to vote, only I was there.
Well, Peggy, good luck this time around. I hope both you and your daughter manage to vote okay.
Oh, well, there'll be a stink this time if we don't. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the phone call. Just a few seconds left with you, Thomas Patterson. Given all the procedural nightmares we heard earlier from Florida, though, do you expect that this is going to be another very late night come November the 2nd?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, if the polls hold and if they're accurate, then I think it is going to be a late night. And then, if it's close, and it's very unlikely that it would be as it was in 2000, with all of these legal issues up in the air, I think we may be into December as we were last time.
Thomas Patterson of the Harvard Kennedy School, thanks very much. More when we come back from a break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about the surge in voter registration. Most of us equate high voter turnout with robust democracy. But should high turnout be a goal in and of itself? John Fund is not so sure. He's a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and he joins us now by phone from New York City. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Pleasure, Neil.
So why is high voter turnout not a positive sign all the time?
Well, I have a long discussion on this in my new book, Stealing Elections. And one of the things that we have to recognize is, of course we want people to vote, and of course we want people to participate, but we have broken from the traditions in Europe and in places like Australia where we fine people from voting. We do not believe that it is such a high value that we want to rope in everyone, no matter how uninformed and how unenthusiastic. In many countries in the world, they fine people if they don't vote. We have a more freedom-oriented, more voluntary approach.
But as I understand this spike in registration this year, nobody's holding a gun to anybody's head or even threatening a jaywalking ticket.
No, of course not. I'm in favor of people voting, but it is not the be-all and end-all. And I must tell you, Neil, I have spent 20 years following elections, and I have seen constant stories about people you know, registering in record numbers. We always wake up on Election Day hearing that, you know, their lines at the polls and we're going to have a higher voter turnout. Well, it almost never materializes. Voter turnout has been basically stable for the last 30 years since 18-year-olds got the right to vote. I'm certain that there might be a slight uptick in battleground states this year, but I think that people who have predicted for 30 years that we are going to see a record voter turnout are probably going to be disappointed again.
Mm-hmm. Do you have concerns about adding new voters to the rolls? Some people encouraged to vote may not be very well informed about what's up at stake this time around.
Well, there are two problems with adding people willy-nilly to the rolls. One is we have several cities, including Columbus, Ohio, and St. Louis, and Philadelphia, where there are more people registered now than there are adults over the age of 18, according to the U.S. Census. So something is clearly wrong there. there are a lot of deadwood on the rolls, which, by the way, artificially makes the voter turnout appear lower than it is. Because if you have a bunch of people who don't exist or aren't or double registered and they don't vote, then voter turnout looks like it's going down when it's really not.
So you're saying we're pre-registering the graveyard?
Well, we're registering people double. We're also registering people who don't exist. We're also registering people who probably shouldn't be voting. And, you know, one of the things that we've noticed is in Pennsylvania and Rhode Island, where Alzheimer's patients have facilities have taken surveys, the voter turnout is higher in those places than they are in the general population.
And that's what you mean by people who you say should not be voting.
Well, if they request their ballot individually and they fill it out, that's fine. But a former Democratic congressman from Pennsylvania pled guilty to voter fraud a few years ago because he was going into nursing homes and, frankly, filling out ballots for people who weren't fully with us. Hmm. That is one of the problems with absentee voting. Absentee voting can easily be misused, especially in places like nursing homes and group homes.
Mm-hmm. Again, drawing the example of places like Australia and many countries in Europe where voting is mandatory, the strength of a political party in this country is to some degree measured by its ability to get out its vote.
Oh, and both sides are moving overtime to that. I am very impressed by the grassroots get-out-the-vote effort that both parties are putting up. And I'm glad, because I think for about 30 years, Neil, we were turning over the desire to vote to people who were watching television commercials and listening to radio commercials. The grassroots campaigning had atrophied. You didn't see buttons, you didn't see stickers, you didn't see people going door-to-door. I am glad to see the return of grassroots activism. So if there's any increase in voter turnout, it will be because we're finally abandoning television commercials and actually going back to shoe leather.
And I was just happened to have been in Iowa over the weekend, and boy, there is not a yard, it doesn't seem, and at least the part of the state I was in Davenport and Bettendorf, that didn't have a sign in the yard this time around.
Absolutely. But again, going back to your original question, if people really, really aren't plugged into this process with all of the news and all of the internet information available and all of the people giving them information, if they really, really aren't plugged in, don't want to be informed, do we really want them to vote? Because think about this. In a jury, sometimes we complain in the juries that we're getting people who literally don't read newspapers. Those are the only people who are eligible for some high-celebrity cases. Well, we don't particularly think that's a good idea to have people who are completely unplugged from the process. Do we really want in the voting process people who choose to be ignorant voting just for the sake of voting?
Do we want to risk, though, having a screening process which might keep people out from voting? I mean, how do you...
Well, look, I frankly think that we have made voting easier and easier. Do you know that... I think Mr. Patterson is actually downplaying a little bit. 20% of people voted earlier absentee last time. We mm-hmm. have liberalized the absentee laws dramatically. We have liberalized the registration laws. Obviously, we can do better. The forms can be looked at. But this year, 30% of people are going to be voting early. We're going to have the opposite problem. We're having people vote before the final debate is held on Wednesday. I mean, if in a jury, again, going back to the analogy, if you were sitting in a jury, Neil, and the judge in the middle of the defense summation leaned over to you and said, you know, if you've heard enough, maybe you can just go into the jury room and leave. You don't have to hear the rest of this testimony. We'd be appalled. Well, we have people now voting up to 5 weeks before the election, before debates, and before they've heard all the information. So we are liberalizing the process so much, we are creating voters who will not get all the information from the campaign they might need.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a caller on the line. Brian is with us from York, South Carolina.
Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Brian.
You asked earlier for examples of larger amounts of voter registration.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my friends fall in the 18 to 29 age bracket that they're always looking at that typically has poor turnout. But this year it's been something different. In previous election years, I could probably count on one hand the amount of friends I had who were registered to vote. let alone who intended to. And this year it's gone up dramatically. I know at least 15 people who are registered to vote newly this year.
And you know your friends better, of course, than I have any hope to. Do you think they're actually going to show up at the polls on Election Day?
I do, because these are people who, you know, honestly, when I would talk to them about politics and what was going on, they would just roll their eyes. They just didn't want to hear it. But it's been really something different this year. I think the combination of foreign policy and domestic policy that's going on in the debates and the issues has really brought them out.
And do you feel that they're informed about the issues?
I do. That's another thing that really surprised me, is they went beyond the commercials. They've been listening to news and watching the news. All 15 of these people have watched the debates, and I was just shocked at how many of my friends that gave me a yes answer to that question.
Yeah, John Fund, you may be right. A lot of people will maybe voting before the last election, but looking at the Nielsen ratings, that first election debate did extraordinarily well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That went up. But just remember, we had a series of primaries, very hard-fought primaries in the Democratic Party this year, and we had predictions of record turnout. With the exception of Iowa and New Hampshire, the turnout was the lowest in recorded history in some states and the lowest in recent history in many states.
After Iowa and New Hampshire, the primaries had been decided.
Oh, no. No, no, no. John Kerry had to go on to Super Tuesday, where there were 9 southern states. Absolutely not. And again, all of those primaries featured hard-fought races for the U.S. Senate, hard-fought races for governor, hard-fought races for Congress. And it wasn't that the vote turnout went down, Neil. It went up just a little. It went down from previous years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm simply saying anecdotes are fine, but let's be cautious, because we always have these anecdotes every year, and they never materialize.
Mm-hmm. Brian, thanks very much. I assume you're intending to go vote on Election Day.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for taking my call.
Very quickly, John Fund, if obviously you've got to inculcate the idea of voting civic experience in voters. If we can bring more young people into the process, sounds like an unalloyed good.
We need to do this in two ways. We need to replace many of our poll workers who are elderly and moving on with younger people. I think we could give them high school and college credit if they volunteered to be poll workers, so they inculcated with those civic virtues. And I think in my book, Stealing Elections, just out, I have a whole chapter in there in which I interviewed election officials, in which they talk about how, why don't we teach people in school how to use these voting machines? Therefore, you know, we have to avoid some of the problems of disenfranchisement. Some of the problems in Florida in 2000, Brian, were people didn't know how to read very well. If you don't know how to read very well, you don't know how to vote very well.
Mm-hmm.
So we need a wholesale voter education program.
And perhaps they could begin with John Fund's new book, Stealing Elections. Thank you, John Fund, for being with us today.
Thank you.
John Fund, a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, joined us by phone from New York City. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.